Good Monday afternoon, LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk. The three hombres from the Sun Sports staff, Case Kiefer, Ryan Green, Ray Brewer, back in the same room for the first time in a month. It's 108, 111, pick your favorite three numbers out there in Vegas, but Ryan and I had a little bit of a reprieve. We're on vacation. Green, the heat kills me, but so does the rain. I was in Pittsburgh, I was in Cleveland, and I was in D.C., and wherever I was, it rained. Four baseball games, rain delay in all four of them.
Oof. Cursed.
Cursed. And the humidity just, like, rips you like a knife. It cuts right through you.
See, we were all right. We were in Chicago and Indiana. Not as much heat, a little bit of humidity. It was livable. It was better than 108 and dry.
I miss rain so much. When I went to Florida a couple months ago, I was just hoping it would be a huge storm, you know, in the spring. Didn't happen. I go to Vancouver where it ranks 60% of the days. It doesn't rain. I never get to see any rain. Can I switch with you and see like at least a little storm?
Well, here's my thing.
I don't want any more.
I'm an undershirt guy. And when you wear an undershirt after rain and the humidity back there, it's like drenched to your clothes. I mean, it's an awful feeling all day.
I guess that deep South blood in me just doesn't bother that. You know, that's what we're used to. That's what we grew up with and down in the dirty.
Yeah, you guys are immune to it. I guess leading the show, fighting Case Kiefer. Everybody tells me comeback of UFC history last night, or what are they using to term this guy about looked knocked out to me. I'm yelling, stop the fight, and then he rallies for the win. Knockout, best knockout ever, best rally ever, best whatever ever.
I thought the fight should have been stopped too at that second. I was sitting shaking my head the third time he knocked down Pat Barry, Chet Congo. Before we get ahead of ourselves, main event of last night's UFC on Versus 4. Looked like Barry knocked down Congo about three times and possibly knocked him out. Just like you, I'm sitting there saying, why isn't this fight stopped? Why isn't this fight stopped? Well, then Congo pops up, hits him with a right hook, kind of straight on. But that doesn't really knock him out. It just kind of makes Barry woozy. And then just, people are saying it was a great punch. I think it was kind of a lucky punch, though, too. Just a perfect uppercut right on the chin of Pat Barry. His eyes roll into the back of his head. He's knocked out. Some people are calling it the greatest comeback of all time. I'll say it was the greatest comeback knockout of all time. I don't think it beats Anderson Silva coming back against Chael Sonnen last summer as the pure greatest comeback of all time, but greatest comeback knockout, I think it's easily awarded that.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I disagree. And I haven't covered a ton of UFC, but I remember watching the fight with Todd Duffy last year where he fought Mike Russo, and that went way into the deep in the third round. Duffy had kicked his butt for about 14 minutes. And with a broken arm and 30 seconds left, knocked Duffy out cold with a lucky punch. It was, it was amazing. But I kind of agree with you where you say it was kind of lucky. It was a lot like the one we wound up talking about a couple weeks ago with Sam Stout, where you know, yeah, it was this great looking knockout, and it's an ooh and ah highlight, but. I mean, it was kind of a lucky shot.
I actually agree. I think Duffy Russo is one of the ones you can argue from UFC 114. But I think the difference between that is, and why maybe that didn't get as much publicity, is because it wasn't as, I don't think it was quite as dramatic, because Russo had really just kind of worn down Duffy. Yeah. It wasn't like he was knocked out, but yeah. And then he caught the punch. But I think that's one you could argue too.
That's true.
LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk, Ryan Green, Case Kiefer. I'm Ray Brewer. We're talking that UFC versus card last night. And obviously, Barry, that leg kick, Case, my question to you, totally off topic, do you think you could take one of those Barry leg kicks?
Oh, I mean,
just one.
I feel like this is like, speaking of timely information, you remember, you guys got to remember the show and the movies Jackass. I feel like this would be a great Jackass stunt if you just take a Pat Barry leg kick. Cause I mean, God, the guy's got so much power in his legs, great kickboxer. This is how he beat his last opponent, Joey Beltran, just tore up his legs. I can't even imagine what his legs look like the next day. Luckily for Chet Congo, didn't have to take too many, but God, you're right. I never want to take one of those leg kicks, especially not more than one.
Yeah, because I know MMA is mixed martial arts, and you always see, you know, boxing and wrestling are probably the most common forms, but you never get to see kickboxing like Pat Barry does. And I don't know if a pure kickboxer could have a lot of success, because eventually you're going to have to get to the ground.
Well, that's been Pat Barry's problem, actually. I mean, he's about 500 in the UFC. One of his second to last fight before this, he dominated Mirko Krokop on the feet the whole entire fight, three rounds. Then he gets on the ground and gets submitted right away. So I mentioned this last week on our show. Pat Barry's kind of a throwback in that he does one thing really well, and doesn't do everything else that good. So I think that's why he's having some tough times. But obviously, that's not what happened last night. Just got unlucky, got knocked out. But really, I think he's got to become more well-rounded if he wants, you know, a big future in the UFC. Because he's at the point now where if he loses one or two more fights, that there's no future for him in the promotion.
Yeah, and that's the key with UFC is I don't think he loses any stock last night because he had a good fighter virtually knocked out. Arguably, the fight could have been stopped. Nothing to really hang your head about, I would think. But you're right. You kind of got a short leash. And we'll talk later about this weekend's 132 card and how this is kind of maybe Tito Ortiz's last go-around, win or lose, right? Maybe. But we'll talk about it later, obviously. Opinions to be announced. But I guess the main news case out of this card last weekend was the shakeup with the main event, Nate Marquette.
Close. It's better than when you're calling Junior Dos Santos Junior De Los Santos. You're getting a little better.
I'm trying my hardest, but more will come out about it this week. Case, break it down for us. What happened?
Basically, about the day before the fight at the weigh-ins, Marquette was supposed to fight Rick Story in the main event. It came out about 24 hours before that he is out of the fight. He's not going to be able to make it. And it was because he allegedly did not finish his medical requirements for Pennsylvania. It's been really bizarre in the last 4 days. Not that much more has come out about it, except for that it didn't have anything to do with weight. He was going to make weight at 170, even though it was his first time. And he didn't fail a drug test, I guess. It's still maybe possible that he refused to take a drug test. This is really just speculation for me. But something happened that Nate Marquardt couldn't make his fight, and it upset Dana White enough to where he cut him from the UFC. This is a guy who's 10-4 in the UFC, has been in the UFC for 5 years, former title contender, and Dana White said he is disgusted, and Nate Marquardt will never fight in the UFC again. So pretty serious stuff. Nate Marquardt has been silent, his camp has been silent, but he did post on Twitter that he's going to speak publicly Tuesday. So I guess we're having the show a day early. We'll probably know more tomorrow of what's going on.
I mean, everybody is throwing around the S word. And I don't know. I mean, I don't want to speculate, but if you're dropping weight, I don't know how you could use a performance enhancer. I don't think it's possible. Not that I know much about science, but...
Or performance enhancers,
but it doesn't seem logical to me in my common sense knowledge.
Well, there's amphetamines you can use that help with that.
To help lose weight.
But, I mean, I don't know. It's really hard to guess. The details, just from what I've been reading, just seem to be so vague.
Yeah, I mean, it is really hard to guess. I guess you're saying the S word, steroids. To me, it doesn't make much sense because of what happened. But maybe something like Ryan said. I don't know all about going down a weight. Maybe some kind of diuretic or something. But here's the thing. He didn't fail a drug test. That much seems clear. But it could be possible that he had like 6 weeks to take a drug test, just kept pushing it off and said, "I'm not going to do it." That's one possibility. Another possibility is maybe he had some kind of illness like hepatitis B, hepatitis C, stuff like this they test for. This is ridiculous, but it's even something that's been thrown around as a rumor that maybe he had an STD and he was supposed to get taken care of, and he didn't. And you're supposed to do it before the fight, and he never did. Whatever it was, really bizarre. We're going to find out more tomorrow, but Dana White not happy, and it looks like Marquardt's days in the UFC are over, and that's not very good financially for him, because at this day and age in MMA, there's not a whole lot of other places you can make a big paycheck other than the UFC.
Except you could go to that great Titan organization.
I knew you were going to bring up Titan in Kansas City, your favorite place, because Phil Baroni fights there.
Phil Baroni, my man.
I'll tell you what, it better be, you know, we've criticized Dana quite a bit lately because, and, you know, in the last couple of years because of snap judgments he makes, and, you know, he makes very emotional decisions in the heat of the moment without maybe kind of, you know, taking a step back and giving himself some time to cool off at times. I'm interested to see what the reasoning is behind this, and it better be something really serious where you can say, yeah, I guess it made sense that he cut him, because otherwise, you know, Dana, I think, is going to be opening himself up for some fire here.
I'd be curious to see if somebody who – I mean, obviously – it's a job. UFC is a job just like any other job, and Nevada is a right-to-work state. So I don't know. I mean, I think he could loosey-goosey fire whoever he wants, but I'd be interested to see somebody who feels they were unjustly cut try to challenge it to get back in. I would be interested to see how it works out, because it's uncharted waters. It's never happened before.
Yeah, and another thing that's just so confusing to me is that it really does seem like no one knows anything. Some of his teammates at gym he's associated with are even on Twitter saying, what's going on with Nate Marquardt? I saw today both Diego Sanchez and Brian Stan, who are kind of teammates of Marquardt, are saying, I have no idea what's going on. Does anyone know? We think Nate Marquardt's a great idea. What's happening? So just a really weird situation. Would like to find out what's going to happen. But at this point right now, I think it's a pretty good bet that Nate Marquardt is going to be that Bellator welterweight champion at this time next year.
Yeah, and then his opponent, a lot of shuffling around, and Story ends up losing to a guy that is basically called in less than 24 hours notice. Hey, come take the fight. The guy takes it and ends up winning.
Yeah, crazy set of circumstances. Actually going to have a story on LasVegasSun.com about Charlie Brenneman later this afternoon, who beat Rick Story. I'd say it was the upset of the year so far this year. Some places had him as high as a plus 500 underdog, and he came in and just out-wrestled Story for two rounds, which was, I think, was actually a good game plan. Look, Story is known as this great wrestler, but he was supposed to fight Marquardt, who's more of a boxer. So his whole camp, he didn't even concentrate on wrestling. He didn't wrestle for the 3 weeks in between Thiago
Alves.
His
whole camp that lasted
yeah, it was
3 weeks.
Yeah, it was only 3 weeks, but still, I think it was a smart game plan by Brenneman. He got it done. Very impressed with Charlie Brenneman, and that really shoots him up unbelievably. I mean, he was more lower-tier guy, welterweight. Now he's going to get a big fight next, and if he wins that, he's right in title contention, which is crazy. Who would talk about Charlie Brenneman as one of the top guys, you know, 2 days ago?
But can you blame Rick Story? I mean, he'd been preparing for one guy his whole camp, and now he's got to try to prepare for a guy who different styles. I mean, do you give that guy that big of a – you know, of a setback in terms of his pairing just because he lost to a guy he wasn't prepared for?
Yeah, I don't think you do, and Dana White said you don't either. I do think it drops him down a little bit, though. Look, if he wins this fight, he's either the next person fighting for the title or he's got to win one more fight to fight for the title. Now he's probably got to win at least two or three more fights. He's not one away anymore. But just really tough situation for Rick Story. Maybe he was a little overtrained. I mean, just... It's hard to speculate, but he did not look like the Rick Story that we saw beat Thiago Alves. All three of us saw beat Thiago Alves 3 weeks ago at UFC 130.
Exactly. LasVegasSun.com sports talk here on 91.5 KUNV. I think it actually brings up a bigger problem. I mean, the UFC, obviously, great organization, promotes its events. It's immensely popular. It's rising every day, but injury is a part of every sport. And the UFC, Ryan, has been hit with injury all summer, it seems. Every card, there's mix-ups. And what do? You still want to keep a guy on a card. One, because there's so many fighters now in the UFC stable. You got to get these guys opportunities to fight. But two, you know, you're promoting somebody's going to be there. So then you got to go and plug somebody in. Would it be easier if one person had to drop off a card if you just told that guy, hey, hang tight and we'll get you a fight on the next one?
I think I don't think there really is a right answer on how to deal with it. I think there's just varying opinions. And my opinion is, you have fewer cards. I think you, and I'm not saying cut it drastically, but you have fewer cards, you know, maybe cut out, you know, how many are there a year total?
At this point, I mean, that's pretty hard. I'd say
30,
40. I was going to say 25 to 30.
25,
probably.
30. All right. So 25, 30, maybe you make it 20 to 25 and, you just make the cards deeper. And, you know, you have the ability to do that now after the acquisition of the WEC and, you know, I think you just make them deeper so that you can pad yourself a little bit, you know, with injuries that, you know, if somebody like that gets, you know, gets hurt and has to, in one of the main events gets hurt, has to back out, you still have maybe one or two other fights that are legitimately main event worthy on that card.
Yeah, because obviously with 131 in Vancouver after Brock dropped off the card case, everybody was like, well, the card doesn't have, at least me, I didn't think it had as much luster with the big name. You obviously thought otherwise. And
yeah, well, here's the thing. I think sometimes people, MMA fans, not only you, MMA fans, look at a card and say, God, this card, these matchups are terrible. This isn't going to be any good. Well, I got to say, probably the second and third best cards of the year so far, and maybe even the first, or these last two, or 131 in this UFC on Versus card, and who would have expected that? So I think it's kind of hard to jump to judgment until we see the fights and see what takes place. Because look, if these guys are in the UFC, they're talented, they've done something right, and it's just kind of lucky to see what cards turn out great and what turn out kind of, you know, sometimes we'll hype up a card as, oh, this is gonna be one of the best of the year, and you'll just see, you know, five decisions in a row on the pay-per-view and they'll be boring fights, and that really hasn't happened lately. Probably a good thing.
Well, speaking of cards, UFC 132 this Saturday in Vegas at Mandalay Bay. The card, for me, and I don't know as much about UFC as you two guys, but when I look at all the names, Tito Ortiz, I want to see Tito fight, man. I mean, he's, I mean, besides Jenna Jameson,
if you watched his last three, you might not, you might change your opinion.
Well, I mean, I know, but like I said, I'm new to the covering the MMA, not like you guys who are more familiar with it. And for me, I think Tito Ortiz sells. I don't know, but
well, I think that I think that's the only reason he's still in there. Yeah. I mean, if any other fighter hadn't won since 2006, like he has, look, there have been seven different champions in his weight class, light heavyweight, since he last won a fight. He hasn't won a fight since 2006, and that's a testament to his drawing power that he's still in the UFC. Anyone else, literally, I think anyone else in the UFC would be cut if they were on the kind of downfall he is. But look at him; he's still on the third highest fight of the card. He's fighting Ryan Bader, who I think, and I think most people think, will just dominate him on Saturday night. I think Ryan Bader is about 4.5-1 favorite.
As he should be.
But here's the one reason why I do think Tito's kind of been treated unfairly is the guy keeps losing and they keep lining up another great guy against him. He just lost to Matt Hamill last year at UFC 121. And now you're going to give him a better version of Matt Hamill? Bader is just a little bit better than Hamill. Why, if he loses, why can't he drop down and fight one of these middle-tier light heavyweights? And we'd see how Tito does instead of lining up, you know, top 10 guy after top 10 guy who keep showing they're in a different class.
Do you think the losing streak from Tito diminishes his legacy a little bit? Is he still one of those all-time great fighters in the organization?
Yeah, absolutely, and he's still responsible for what he did in putting the organization on the map, and that's the reason he does still sell, is because a lot of those people that have been fans, you know, since the early 2000s and the late 90s, you know, he was a hero to a lot of them. So, you know, he's you know, is he hanging on a little bit too long at the end? You know, maybe.
Who doesn't go in what every sport?
Well, that's true, but you know, I don't know. I see. And in case I agree with your point about maybe they're lining up too good of fighters, but I thought when they lined up Matt Hamill for him, I thought that was a winnable fight. The Forrest Griffin fight, I didn't really think that was a winnable. Who did he fight after Forrest? I can't even remember.
I think it was Forrest, then Hamill.
And
right?
then Hamill. But yeah, I mean, it just those two fights, it just, you know, the Forrest one maybe was after being away for as long as he was a little over his head, but. You know, I thought the Hamill fight was certainly winnable, and but I don't think this one is.
Yeah, no, I like the Hamill fight. I thought that was a good fight, pretty evenly matched. I bet I actually wasn't really paying that close of attention then, but I bet Hamill went off as a slight favorite. But what I don't understand is you lose to a guy like Matt Hamill that's probably in the 15 to 20 range, and then you say, okay, well, guess what? You're going to turn around and face Ryan Bader, who's probably sixth or seventh best guy in the light heavyweight class.
Trying to stack the card a little bit, baby.
I just don't know. I like Ryan Bader in this fight. Brewer, you seem to be on the Tito train. Tell me, why do you think Ortiz has a chance? Is it just the name alone? You think he's going to regain the mystique?
You just like the price.
I like the price, and he's been there. He's done that. He knows how to respond. I'm a little nervous. You said Forrest Griffin just beat Tito or beat him recently. Forrest is now on the Facebook version of the cards, right? Last night, didn't he fight on Facebook?
No, that was Tyson Griffin.
Tyson's Griffin. Hey, I got my Griffins.
Yeah, you got him. Forrest Griffin actually going to be the co-main event of UFC 134 against Shogun, who still very much a top guy.
Okay. Well, see, you learn something new every day, but I'm paying attention. I just think that Tito has been there, done that. You know, it's like Derek Jeter is up the bat against who's a hot young pitcher in the American League right now.
And he's hitting 220.
No, Jeter's hitting like 250, 260. But with the game on the line, Jeter's at bat against, like, I don't know, David Price maybe? Somebody who's real tough and nasty and gets him out? Are you taking David Price, or do you think Derek Jeter?
David Price.
I'm taking David Price too, but I like the parallel.
I like the parallel.
I'm taking Ryan Bader and David Price over Tito Ortiz and Derek Jeter.
Tito, if you watch the last two fights that Tito's had since coming back to the UFC, I can't remember one thing he did in those fights where you just looked at him and thought, wow, and he looked dangerous. He was just kind of in there surviving. And it's going to take a lot more than that to beat Ryan Bader because it just is.
Remember the Pacquiao Mosley weekend? I was like, go put 700 on Pacquiao to win 100. Is this where we go put 450 on Bader to win 100?
No, this is where you put about the mortgage on Bader to win about 1,000.
Yeah, I don't know. I would say I think Tito beating Ryan Bader, I don't think it would be as big as upset as Brenneman beating Story. So it could happen, but I'm still taking Ryan Bader. I really like that Ryan Green used the word dangerous. Because I got to tell you, if there's one word to describe the co-main event of this UFC 132, Wanderlei Silva and Chris Leben, these are two of the most dangerous guys. Look, this isn't a fight where it has major title implications, or right after this we're going to be talking about this guy's going to win the middleweight
it has none.
Class, but it is a fight for the fans. It is a fight that should just be absolute barn burner. The Axe Murderer versus the Crippler. I think that says enough. It might
last a round.
Yeah, I mean, it should just be insane. These guys are going to swing away at each other. I got to say, it's the fight I'm looking most forward to on the card. Leben coming off a loss, Silva coming off 18 months to injury. This should be a good one at UFC 132.
Now you got me all intrigued. I can't wait. I just want to see, after watching that knockout last night on TV, you just
your juices flowing?
Didn't get my juices flowing, but, you know, you go to a boxing match, you want to see those heavyweights to where one guy can knock one guy to the ground. Right, and last night those were some big boys going at each other. Well, now you're telling me I got a chance to see somebody get knocked out, baby. I'm in.
Well, and see, because you were talking about the Tito Ortiz been there, done that, and you know Leben's kind of the same way because he's been there, he's been around the UFC for a while, and you know everybody knows Wanderlei Silva's story, but you know Leben, I think what Leben's done in the last year or so is what they had maybe hoped that Tito Ortiz would be able to do. And that his career was kind of floundering for a while, and he had a nice resurgence. He had who was it that he beat at? It was last summer.
116. That incredible
comeback.
Yoshihiro Akiyama. 11 days after beating Aaron Simpson.
Yeah, and he had two incredible wins back to back after his career appeared to be kind of dying. One was at a tough finale, and then he had the 11 days later had the other win. And, you know, that's kind of what I think they hoped that Tito Ortiz had. This is the kind of fight that Chris Leben should be in. This is putting him up against a bigger name, and they're maybe trying to build him back up. I have a hard time picking Leben in the fight, though.
All I got to say is that on LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk, you get some in-depth MMA, UFC knowledge. You guys are dropping UFC 10 this, UFC this.
Well, he knows the numbers. I just kind of remember details.
I'm like trying to like, hey, listen, how do you pronounce this guy's name? Is it Dominic?
Dominic Cruz. I will say this, though. UFC 116 was the very first UFC event I ever went to.
I went to
Red Cider, and it was probably the best event they've ever had. Some people would still say it was absolutely insane. And it was highlighted by Leben coming back against Akiyama in the co-main event.
And then the Carwin-Lesnar fight.
Yeah, and then the Carwin-Lesnar fight. It was just insane. But while it looks, sounds like Green's taking Wanderlei, it sounds like you are a little bit undecided. I'm going to tell you what, I might make a fool of myself, but on this pay-per-view main card, out of the five fights, I'm taking three underdogs. I think Chris Leben's going to win.
Tito.
No, not Tito.
No, absolutely.
I like Uriah Faber to beat Dominic Cruz in the main event for the bantamweight title, and I also like Matt Wyman to beat Dennis Seaver in a lightweight bout. So I'm taking three of five underdogs. Am I setting myself up for failure here?
It's a doggy-dog summer, right? You got to take a lot of dogs, parlay it, get down to the casino.
What do you think, Green? Am I setting myself up for failure?
No, I like that. I like those. I like all three of those. I like this card because, you know, what I was talking about earlier where you're talking about a card with depth, I was flipping through these sheets, the Ray Brewer's little cheat sheets here, and you look at some of the names on this, you know, as you go down. Dong Young Kim, Melvin Guillard's always exciting to watch. I mean, there's just kind of excited. George Sotiropoulos is, you know, near the bottom of the card. It's an impressive card top to bottom. This is kind of what I'm talking about, where you have some fights that can be elevated up to a main card status if someone has to drop out.
I'll say I had dinner with Melvin Guillard about a month ago, and that was one of the most entertaining dinners I've ever had with a few other media members. He got a few glasses of wine in him, and
that guy is a character.
I'll say that. He should dominate Shane Roller, who he's fighting, 2.5-1 favorite, but he should make it exciting because that guy's got a lot of knockout power and a lot of unpredictability in and outside of the cage, I'll say that much.
All these guys are characters. I want to know, Dominic Cruz, case 17-1, and you don't think he's going to make it 18-1? Who has he been fighting? Some tomato cans?
Who's that one loss? That one loss is Uriah Faber. There you go. I don't know. I think at this point of their careers, Dominic Cruz is the younger, the better fighter. And this is the type of thing I usually don't pay attention to. This is the type of thing you would usually bring up. But being around Uriah Faber, I think he is the most determined guy, one of the most determined athletes I've ever been around. I think he works harder than everyone else. I think it's his lifelong dream to have a UFC title. He couldn't do it before because he was in the WEC in the lower weight classes. He's older. This is his last chance. I think he reclaims that glory, wins the belt. I don't think he's going to keep it for very long, because I think the guys that are going to run up next to him are going to, I think Cruz will ultimately get the belt back. But I just, something about Uriah Faber, I think Cruz is a little bit arrogant right now. I think he's feeling on top of the world, like he's by far the best 135-pounder. I think Faber is gonna crush him. I think he's going to win a decision. I'm really intrigued, really ready for this fight.
I guess I'm ready for it, too.
Are you taking Cruz? I got to get you guys as picks. I'm taking Faber.
I'm taking Cruz. I mean, 17-1, I don't care who that one loss is to.
I'll take Faber.
I mean, are they going to be able to clean up the blood after the Silva-Lieben match, the bloodbath before?
I'll take slipping all over the mat.
I'll take Faber, only because if I learn one thing betting-wise this summer, it's that you go against whatever Ray Brewer is picking.
Wow.
Well, let me tell you, the last UFC card, buddy, I hit a two-teamer.
Huh? Who's your two-teamer
on
this card?
I'm not convinced. All right, here we go. We're gonna each pick here. We need to pick a three-team parlay off this card to give our listeners. Who are you going with?
Ooh, that's tough. You put me on the spot. Definitely putting Ryan Bader on there. I think that's just free money against Tito Ortiz. I'm going to go Bader. These might be the three chalkiest guys, but I'm going to go Bader with Soteropoulos over Dos Anjos, because I think that's easy. And then the second bout of the night, Anthony Njokwani from Las Vegas should have no problem against Andre Winner. So I'm going to go Bader to Soteropoulos to Winner. I'll pass it over to Ray Brewer.
And remember for next week.
We'll pass this over to Ray Brewer and see what he says.
I'm going Dominic Cruz, parlayed to Tito Ortiz.
Oh, wow.
Parlayed to Shane Roller.
Hey, Ray, why don't you...
Parlayed to Shane... Wow, this is going to be a
Ray,
big
why don't you, I want you to give me that $20 so I can go back back out and just kind of clean my car with it, because, I mean, it's being wasted anyway. But if I had to pick...
I think the max you could do is two teams, though. By the way,
I'm gonna go with Matt Wyman. Parlayed.
Tito.
Absolutely
Tito.
Not. Soteropoulos. So Wyman to Soteropoulos to Bader. Wyman, Bader, Soteropoulos.
I kind of like greens because you get a decent payout. Brewers, you would get an astronomical payout.
Now,
but I don't think it has any chance.
What's the price on Wyman?
I think Wyman's about plus 120.
All right, and Bader.
Minus 150. Bader's about minus 350, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Or minus 400.
And then Soteropoulos.
Soteropoulos probably about 3 to 1.
Okay.
Well, LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk.
I have to run over to the Hard Rock.
Right now, he's going over. Everybody go see Ron at the Hard Rock. NBA draft last week in our final minute. I'm not going to bring it up, but I wanted to get your opinion. Do you think Shabazz Muhammad is a one-and-done guy, two-and-done guy from Gorman?
He should be none-and-done, but because of the stupid rule, he will be one-and-done.
Yeah, he's one-and-done no matter what he does in his first year of college. It's in his mind he's going, so he's going.
I don't care what he does.
Are you following that guy on Twitter at all?
Yes.
And he thinks he's there already, by the way.
I would, too, if I were that young and that talented.
So Shabazz, as we talked about, he's at UNLV 1 year, and then he goes pro.
Absolutely not.
No.
Yeah.
I won't say absolutely not, but no.
I think he's got about as good of a chance as going to my Miami Heat than he does UNLV.
I'd make UNLV about plus four, right now about plus 280 to land him.
Wow. Okay.
Just
so,
tempting enough that you might have to take it.
So who's got a bigger chance, Tito or UNLV?
Tito, he's at least got a puncher's chance.
Wow.
I don't know. That's too hard.
LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk, the Tito Ortiz fan show. We'll talk to you guys next Monday, 5:30. Get your motor running. Head out on the highway. Looking for adventure.